Good day and welcome to the Longevity Podcast. My name is Stan Brown, Vice President, Marketing Director of these wonderful health supplements started by Dr. Joel Wallach, author of Dead Doctors Don't Lie. At the end of the Longevity Podcast, if you are interested in our supplements, there will be a telephone number and website to order. Now let's get informed.
I grew up on a beef farm in Missouri, and like everybody else that raises livestock, we raise a lot of our own feed to stay in business. And we raise corn and soybeans and hay, and we grind this stuff up into a flour, and we'd add vitamins and minerals and trace minerals. You make pellets, and you feed those calves for about 6 to 9 months, and then you ship them off to be butchered or maybe to other feeders. And you always save back the very best ones for yourself, and you knock them in the head and eat them. It's a real simple cycle on the farm. And the thing that fascinated me as a teenager was that we went to a great deal of trouble for those calves, and yet, as a family, we ate out of the very same fields. We'd keep back five rows of corn for ourselves. We had a garden at the end of the field where we grew our peas and beans and squash and tomatoes. And we wanted to live to be 100 with no aches and pains, and we didn't give ourselves the very same vitamins and minerals and trace minerals that we gave the calves. And I always used to ask my dad, I'd say, hey, Pops, how come we go to all that trouble for those calves and not for ourselves? And he'd say, shut up, boy. You're getting farm fresh food, fresh air, lots of free exercise. Don't ask complicated questions. And I was glad to get rid of the farm exercise and go to ag school at the University of Missouri. And there my major was in animal husbandry and nutrition. My minor was in field crops and soils. And I began to learn technical things about soil chemistry and how it related to tons and bushels per acre and ag economics. But I didn't get an answer to my basic question until I became a freshman veterinary student at the University of Missouri. And there I learned that the reason why we put all these vitamins and minerals and trace minerals into animal feeds, bottom line, is because we don't have insurance for them. We don't have Blue Cross, Blue Shield, major medical hospitalization, Medicare, Medicaid. And if we were to use a human healthcare type of system for animals, it'd be sticker shock for you. And your hamburger would cost you $275 a pound, boneless, skinless chicken breast would be $450 a pound, dozen eggs would be $50, just to pay for the health care. So we learned that we could keep the price of animal products, such as meat and dairy and poultry and eggs, down to where the average American could afford them, simply by significantly reducing or totally eliminating health care costs. And we do that in animals by preventing and curing diseases with nutrition. Well, after graduating vet school, I went to Africa for a couple of years and got to work with Marlon Perkins from the old Mutual of Omaha Wild Kingdom days, and that was kind of a kick. Got to play Frank Buck, use a tranquilizer gun, tromp all over Central and South Africa for a couple of years. And then Marlon sent me a telegram and invited me back to the States. He'd gotten a $7.5 million grant from the National Institutes of Health, and this was more than 30 years ago, and this was to study pollution and ecology and the environment. And my job as the wildlife veterinarian on the project was to do autopsies of animals that died of natural causes in the big zoos around the United States. And I was supposed to identify or find a species of animals that was ultra-sensitive to pollution. And we're going to use that animal much like the old coal miners used to use canaries. You know how that goes. They take the canary down in the mine, and if methane gas or carbon monoxide were to leak into the mine, the canaries were more sensitive than the men and would drop off the perch and die, and long before the men were in danger of suffocating or blowing up. Well, to make a long story short, after some 12 plus years of working on this project, I had done some 17,500 autopsies and over 454 species of animals, plus 3,000 human beings for a comparison. And what I learned was that every animal and human being who dies of natural causes dies of a nutritional deficiency disease. And I got kind of excited about nutrition again, and I wrote 75 scientific papers on the subject, wrote chapters for 8 multi-author textbooks, actually contributed a textbook myself, 1,000 pages, 2,000 illustrations, and through the news releases that were in the big universities I worked with, I was on 2020, it was in 1,700 newspapers around the world through the UPI and AP Newswire services. And with all this public exposure and with all this scientific exposure, I couldn't get people who are in a position of authority, either in medical research or in politics, to get too concerned or interested in preventing and curing diseases in human beings with nutrition, just like we did in animals. Well, I got frustrated enough. I went back to school in Portland, Oregon, became a physician, and I practiced there for 12 years as a general family practitioner. And I sewed up chainsaw wounds, delivered babies, used everything that I'd learned in veterinary nutrition on my human patients. And it was no surprise to me that it worked just as well in people as it did in animals. Well, to get started, I always like to talk about longevity And the human being has the genetic potential to live healthily, to be 120. I'm going to prove that to you in just a minute. Unfortunately, Americans do a lousy job when it comes to longevity. Our average lifespan in the United States is 75.5, about half what we're genetically capable of. In 1990, when the World Health Organization examined the top 32 industrialized nations on Earth, the United States came out 17th. There was actually 16 other countries whose peoples live longer than we do. We ranked 19th in healthfulness. That meant that there were 18 other countries whose peoples live longer than we do before they develop heart disease and cancer and diabetes and arthritis and osteoporosis. We ranked 23rd when it came to live births and first-year survivabilities of babies, and we ranked dead last, 32 out of 32, when it came to preventing birth defects. Now, what all this means is we have the highest-priced healthcare system in the world, but not the best. It also means that we have the most envied healthcare system in the world, but not the best. We have the most technologically advanced healthcare system in the world, but not the best. Well, I had a good friend by the name of Christopher Bird for many, many years, over 20 years, and Chris was a best-selling author on books on organically grown food. He was an expert in this subject, and I was always trying to give him vitamins and minerals, and he refused to take them, and he'd tell me, Doc, I bring my own cooler. I don't eat any hotel food. I bring my own organically grown food, and so I don't need to take vitamins and minerals. Well, I was changing planes, again, in Atlanta, had an hour to kill, picked up the local newspaper, and guess whose obituary I found in the newspaper? Chris Bird. Of course, again, he was a best-selling author of books, The Secret Life of Plants, The Secrets of the Soil, and he died at age 68 from a ruptured aneurysm, a type of stroke, 7.5 years before the average American dies. And he led a pristine life, lived up in the mountains, had an organically grown garden, collected herbs, you know, like Yule Gibbons, and ate wild hickory nuts and all those kind of things. And because of his belief, he died of a copper deficiency. And I'll show you in a minute that copper deficiency causes ruptured aneurysms. And it's just a tragic thing that the people have so much to give and die at less than half their genetic potential for longevity. A lot of people say to me, Doc, I don't need to take vitamins and minerals and trace minerals because I use herbs. Now, herbs are not nutrition. You have to understand that herbs are not nutrition. They are great plant medicines. They're safer. They're more economical, and in most cases are more effective than prescription medications that doctors will give you, but they're plant medicines. If you have diarrhea, they can tighten you up. If you have constipation, they can loosen you up. If you have hypertension or high blood pressure, they can bring it down. If you have a fever, they can bring it down. But don't expect to get enough calcium or selenium or boron or copper or vitamin A from herbs. Well, I've been doing biomedical research and clinical research in animals and human beings, and I can tell you no matter how you look at health and longevity, whether it be in animals or human beings, there's only really two concepts you have to deal with. Concept number one, I refer to as avoid stepping on the landmines. This is where you don't want to throw away your healthy physical body wastefully. You don't want to smoke. Don't abuse alcohol. Don't do drugs. Don't jog down the highway at 2 o'clock in the morning wearing an all-black ninja suit. You're going to get hit by a truck mirror, right? Whenever a doctor says, here's our options, never say, Doc, whatever you say, you're the doctor. When a doctor says, here's our options, what you want to do is say, look, I want copies of all these records and tests. I want copies of the x-rays. And go visit 3 other doctors and 3 other hospitals. You want to talk to 12 of their living patients that had gone through this procedure. Talk to them, see if you really want to do this. I mean, you do this for your driveway and your roof and your fence and your yard and all that kind of stuff. Why not for your own physical body? That's concept number one. Now that you've avoided the landmines, you're in a good position to do all the positive things that you need to do to go on to live to be over 100. Basically, what you want to do is take all the essential nutrients, 60, that's 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 essential amino acids, and 3 essential fatty acids. And they're called essential nutrients for 2 reasons. Number one, your body cannot manufacture them. You must consume these every day, either as food or as supplements. Number two, if any one of these essential nutrients is missing for a couple of months, a couple of years, you get on the average 10 deficiency diseases. You have everything to gain, nothing to lose by supplementing properly. Well, the medical profession, of course, has this malignant, dumb belief that you can get everything you need from your 4 food groups. My favorite article of all time in the press was April 6, 1992. Time magazine, cover article, The Real Power of Vitamins. New research shows it may help fight cancer, heart disease, and the ravages of aging. 6 positive pages. If you haven't read it, I'd urge you to go to a public library, school library, dig it out and read it. There was only one negative sentence, and as you might guess, it was offered by a medical doctor who was actually contacted by the writer of the article, said, what do you think about vitamins and minerals and trace minerals as supplements for human nutrition? Here's what he said, quote, popping vitamins doesn't do you any good, sniffs Dr. Victor Herbert, a professor of medicine at New York City's Mount Sinai Medical School. We get all the vitamins we need in our diets, and taking supplements just gives you expensive urine, unquote. Now, Missouri translation of that is you're just peeing away your money. You might as well wad up your dollars, throw them in a toilet, and flush them away. You can get everything you need from your 4 food groups, is what he's trying to say. Well, I'd rather pee out 50 cents or a dollar a day worth of excess vitamins and minerals. That's cheap insurance. Think about it. How much money you spend for coffee or soft drinks or newspapers and that kind of stuff every day. 50 cents to a dollar a day to maintain and repair your body. And it's kind of fascinating that most people don't do it. Just remember, when you pay that doctor out of your own pocket or indirectly through insurance or indirectly through taxes, Medicare, Medicaid, not a single penny of that goes to better understand, manage, treat, prevent, or cure catastrophic diseases in kids, breast cancer in women, prostate cancer in men. Now, a lot of people ask me, why did you call your original tape Dead Doctors Don't Lie? Well, that's because I believe for a long time, because I'd done medical research for over 20 years in large medical research institutes, medical schools, the various laboratories, and I always had a belief in the medical system, but I was very disappointed when I learned that doctors don't know the most about health and longevity. Doctors don't know the most about disease. They do know about procedures, you know, how to fix your bones when you break them and that sort of thing, how to do a CAT scan. And so I began to look in the medical journals, and sure enough, the first article ever published on health and longevity of American doctors was published in JAMA on June 15, 1895, a little over 100 years ago. They said at that time, doctors lived to be 54.6. I redid the study 97 years later using the same obituary techniques that they did in JAMA. This was January 20th, 1993, in that particular issue of JAMA, and it turned out the doctors lived to be 57.6. I rounded up to 58 to give them the benefit of the doubt, and doctors just went berserk when I said that. I mean, this was the most outrageous thing that they ever heard. My principle is, my premise is, that doctors don't live as long as the average couch potato in America. And I purposely put that figure out there at 58 to try and challenge people. Well, doctors immediately looked at all the insurance actuarial charts. They got 250,000 dead doctors. They said, your group's too small. So they looked at 250,000 dead doctors and they say, doctors don't live to be 58, they die at 62. They still don't live to be 75.5 like the average couch potato. We actually reran this again using the entire obituary history for 1996. And for the entire 1996, of all the doctors dying in 1996, with all the medical treatments and drugs and procedures and everything, and transplants, doctors in that study lived to be 70, still 5.5 years short of the average couch potato in America. So they still have never proven that doctors live as long as everybody else, and that's why dead doctors don't lie. Now, if you do everything right, how old can you live to be? Is it worth all the effort? I believe it is. Here's one. Christian Mortensen from San Rafael, California, in August of 1995, turned 113. August of 1996, he turned 114. He's still going strong. Certainly can live to be 115. Smokes a couple of cigars a day like George Burns, who also lived to be over 100. Certainly was, I guess, the only exercise George Burns ever did was put the cigars in his mouth. This gal here, Dora Ramathebe from South Africa, in July of 1995, turned 114. And when she was asked by the media, Dora, what do you attribute your health and longevity to? She did not say that we owe it all to our annual physical or our HMO. She said, I ate locust every day. You know, a little grasshopper. She's not a vegetarian. She's little animals. Pumpkin seeds, tortoise meat, wild herbs, dried fruit, and starts each day with a cup of coffee. This gal here, Margaret Skeets from Radford, Virginia, in 1994 was the oldest documented living American when she died at age 115. Fell over and fractured her hip. 3 weeks later, she was dead from complications of osteoporosis, a simple calcium deficiency. And we'll talk more about this in a minute. Unfortunately, this is not unusual. 75% of all Americans over the age of 65 who fracture a hip or major leg bone don't live 90 days. They die of pneumonia, pulmonary embolism, stroke, and other complications of that fracture. Susie Brunson, according to her family, in December of 1994 was the oldest American when she died at age 123, and they based her claim on her birth date, December 25th, 1870, which was recorded in the family Bible. And this fellow here, Francisco Barrasnueva Chaparina, October 1995. He was from a little town outside of Bogota, Colombia, turned 125. When he was asked by the media, Francisco, what do you attribute your health and longevity to? He said, well, I drink a gallon of goat's milk every day. Also, it's kind of fascinating in his birthday announcement. This is not an obituary. This is a birthday announcement. Said that over 40 years ago, his physicians told him he only had a couple of months to live, so he had his sons build him a coffin. And he's been waking up every morning for more than 40 years, sitting by that coffin, waiting to die. Good nighttime comes, he goes to bed, wakes up the next morning, sits by the coffin, waits to die. Now, he's still going strong, and all the doctors who told him that more than 40 years ago are long since dead. Now, this fellow here, Hamoudi El Abdullah from Syria, died at age 133, and he was still fathering children after the age of 100. He remarried for the fourth time when he was age 80, fathered four boys, five girls, nine children after the age of 80 with the same wife. And then we add up the pregnancies and the breastfeeding, the time in between pregnancies, he was still fathering children after the age of 100. Now this very next one is my very, very favorite. This gal, Mazumi Dusti from Iran, according to the Rocky Mountain News Wire Services out of Denver and the Iranian News Agency, this was January of 1995. She died at age 161. Now, you have to give a certain amount of credibility to this obituary report that she died at age 161 because she was survived by six living children ranging in age from 120 to 128. They hadn't even left home to go to college yet. Now, her oldest son, Golam, said his mother had never visited a doctor nor taken any chemical medications during her life, did take a few herbs. So, if you kind of think about it, every one of these people who lived to be over 100, 120, 130, 160, these people are not from the United States or Canada or Germany or England. Kind of interesting, isn't it? Most of them are from third world countries. They're furthest away from medical help, and they live to be old. So we're beginning to collect information here. The last one we want to look at, the National Geographic Society, a very respected group of people, scientists and so forth, and support groups for science, comes out with a monthly magazine, the National Geographic magazine, of course. And they, in January of 1973, came out with a nifty special issue on longevity. They looked at cultures whose people live to be 120, and they documented the oldest living human being that they could find based on their criteria. This fellow, by the name of Shirali Mizmalov from Azerbaijan, a little country just south of Russian Georgia in western Russia today, they documented him as being 167 years old. Remember, this is the National Geographic Society, not the National Enquirer. 167 years of age, and they had a half-page picture of him actually harvesting tea leaves in a tea plantation, still working 8 hours a day, 6 days a week when he's 167. 5 months later, May of 1973, Shirali Mizmalov turns 168, goes out and hoes the garden for reporters to show how vigorous he is. Now, for at least 50, maybe 70 years, medical doctors in America have been poo-pooing the idea that you could live well beyond 100. You know, people who lived 115, 120, they were 1 in 6 billion. It wasn't something that everybody could look forward to. And anybody who tried to teach people how to live to be 110, 120, 140 were considered charlatans and quacks and taking advantage of older people. And I was glad to see this come out. This was a news article in the USA Today newspaper in October of 2000. And it was based on an article in the journal Science, a very respectable journal. And what they said was, forget 100, try living past 120. Humans possess a maximum life expectancy longer than 120 years, which had been the long theorized medical limit. In fact, lifespans appear to be increasing over time with no end in sight. Now the cute part of this is, now that there's no doubt about it, everybody agrees that human beings, including Americans, have the genetic capacity to live well beyond 120. And doctors want to take credit for it. The things that have actually increased our longevity from 45 average lifespan in 1895 to 75.5 today, which is an increase of about 30 and a half years, are sewers and good clean water, public health things. We don't have cholera and leptospirosis and tuberculosis in our food supply and our water supply anymore. We have meat inspection, we have public waterworks and things, we have sewers. These are the things that have extended our lifespan.
Thanks for tuning in to our podcast today. To order, visit longevityonline.com/Stan Brown or call me at 704-225-7040. Thank you.